Richard Russo's finely observed novels celebrate the life of small industrial towns and the ordinary people who live in them. His last, Empire Falls, won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 2002, and Knopf has just published his latest, Bridge of Sighs. I'm very pleased that it has brought Richard Russo back to the show today. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
And I'm okay. It's been 6 years since Empire Falls was published. In between, you published your first book of short fiction, The Horse Child. Have you always written short pieces, or was that a way to clear your head after that novel, which many people called your masterpiece?
Kind of a palate cleanser?
Well, I would imagine that it would have been a bit daunting to begin a new novel right away.
I had pretty much, it wasn't long after that that I began Bridge of Sighs. Actually, that collection of short stories is mostly outtakes from other novels. I don't write an awful lot of short fiction, and I think only two of the stories in that collection of stories were originally conceived of as short stories. The other things were all part of novels that didn't fit in, and I snipped them out and then kind of went at them in a kind of different way.
They say that's one of the hardest things to do, to sacrifice something you really love, but that just doesn't work within a novel. So you found other ways to repurpose them.
Yeah.
This book takes place in the fictional town of Thomaston, New York. How close is it to your hometown of Gloversville?
I think if you looked at my Mohawk and my North Bath from Nobody's Fool, and Empire Falls, and now this
Empire
fictional,
Falls was in Maine.
That was in Maine, but that was just because I needed an ocean nearby, closer than my geographic. I needed some place for Max Roby to go and paint the windows shut for vacation homes. And so I set it in Maine. But to some extent, that's just another upstate New York mill town. And now this last one, and they all have drawn something on my hometown of Gloversville, New York.
Well, you moved to Maine when mm-hmm. you were teaching at Colby College and decided to stay. Why
yeah.
not go back to upstate New York, if not somewhere else?
I was asked that question a couple of days ago in Albany, and they said, you know, if you are the quintessential New York upstate writer,
yeah,
William Kennedy lives in Albany, why don't you live in New York? And it's a complicated thing. When I go back, I feel like I am among ghosts. And that's fine. Most of the ghosts are fine. My father, I see my father coming around every corner when I'm home. And that's, for the most part, a very pleasurable thing. And a lot of the ghosts are pleasurable when I visit there. The ghost I'm not so crazy about encountering there is the ghost of my younger self, strangely enough. And so maybe part of me says I've moved on, like Noonan in this book, I guess.
Although it's weird because most expatriates move far away, even though they may write about the place they left. But you moved to a place that was fairly similar.
Yeah.
Thomaston was home to a tannery, now closed, which both provided employment for the citizens of the town but poisoned its water supply. Is that a trade-off that a lot of those old industrial towns have made?
Well, I'm just a storyteller, not a sociologist, but that certainly seems to be the truth, as I understand it. And that's one of the things that this novel is about, is that trade-off, the extent to which
pollution
that
is a big
which,
issue here.
That which poisons us, that which sustains us may also poison us. And Noonan at one point remarks that we die of what we love.
And that was also one of the themes of Empire Falls. And because both of these novels revolve around the question of whether to stay in a dying town or to escape, that's obviously another one of your themes. Are people right in seeing this as a central concern of your writing? Or did it just happen that these two books had that?
Yeah, these last two books have certainly had that. And one really simple way of looking at Bridge of Sighs is that it's a very long novel that compares what happens when someone stays and when someone leaves. The main character, I suppose, Lou C. Lynch, is the boy who stays and is 60 years old when the novel opens, and is dreading the prospect of leaving, even temporarily, to go to a foreign country. Whereas Bobby, the boy who has left, has spent his entire life abroad and is now dreading the possibility of returning to the United States and possibly Thomaston for the first time in a couple of decades.
Lou is the picture of contentment, pleased with his life, married to his high school sweetheart. Bobby, outwardly successful, is unhappy and self-destructive. But he might have been unhappy and self-destructive if he'd remained home.
He might very well have. I think that, strangely enough, there was a kind of wisdom to what both of these men did. I think that that Lucy loves everything about his life. Other people might see it as a diminished life, but that's certainly not the way he sees it. He has a wife that he has adored for their entire marriage. He has a son of whom he is very proud. And just as important, he has his version of America, his version of this town, and he has his father's buoyant optimism still.
But Lucy's wife, Sarah, could have wound up with Bobby.
And I think came fairly close. there was that one kiss.
She made the safe choice.
I think she made the safe choice. Sarah's primary, the question of her life, I think, has been, as she puts it to herself, is it better to love or to be loved? And she has chosen, I think, to be loved. And I think that that's probably for her a wise choice. But like so many of the wise choices that we make in life, it leaves us wondering about the unwise choice.
Well, the ideal, of course, would be to love and be loved. But
Indeed. We
can't always arrange that. Richard Russo's latest novel is called Bridge of Sighs. It is published by Knopf. Lou is writing a memoir, which is also a history of the town, and his narrative is one of the threads of your story. Was making your main character a writer, although an amateur one, an autobiographical touch? Because a lot of writers do not like to write about writers.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I made Noonan a painter. Actually, is when you need an artistic temperament. I agree. I'm not fond of. I'm always looking for other occupations that I can talk about the creative process in without actually using a writer. And so Lucy writing a memoir in this allowed me to talk a little bit about writing, because he discovers how difficult it is and how it doesn't turn out the way he expected it to.
Now, we should point out he's called Lucy because he had a high school teacher who identified everybody by their first name and their middle initial, and everybody heard Lucy and decided...
Lucy Lynch, right.
But using the memoir also allows you to switch back and forth between first person and omniscient narrator. What is your natural inclination?
About which
first,
I prefer?
First, third person.
Well, I love first person, and especially the first person in this novel for a couple of reasons. I like it because it allows you to play with voice. Really, the only reason to have a first person narrator is that you want that particular, peculiar voice. But also in this case, because Lou is not a particularly reliable narrator. He does his best. But one of the really thrilling aspects for me as the author of Bridge of Sighs is to let Lucy tell his story in his own voice, and then to go at those same events with a more omniscient narrator, which calls into question the veracity of some of the events that Lucy has reported. It causes us to wonder what he might be withholding, either intentionally or unintentionally, and allowing those two narratives to throw off fictional sparks was part of the fun of this particular book.
Also allowing his personality to come across, which you do very well.
Of course.
He gives us a detailed map of the town's social structure, the poor West End, the lower middle class East End, and the wealthy neighborhood called the Borough. Do you think that small towns have more rigidly enforced hierarchies than large cities like New York City?
Well, I think what happens in large towns and in cities is that people tend to group in economic patterns. There are an awful lot of American cities right now that are built up of gated communities,
I wouldn't live in them for that very reason.
Exactly.
I like the fluidity of a city like New York where your next door neighbor or two blocks down anyway, there'll be people who are very different than you.
Exactly. And one of the reasons people always say, well, you know, you write a lot about small towns, and of course I do, and I have a lot of experience of small towns, so I'm kind of writing about what I know. But just as important, or maybe more importantly, is that I write about class, just as Lucy is doing in his memoir. He wants to explain the difference between the West and East End and Borough. And there's no better crucible for talking about class than small towns where people have to deal with each other.
And in this case, there's a tension also between the Irish and Italian Catholic communities. Both the Lynches and the Marconis are mixed marriages, mm-hmm. which I assume happens a lot in small towns. At the same time, it makes people very conscious of last names. Bobby Marconi changes his name. He actually takes his mother's maiden name, Newman, mm-hmm. Before he goes off and becomes a successful painter. I guess it's because of all the tensions that he experienced as one of the Italian kids.
Yeah.
And Newman.
Yeah, that was certainly true when I was growing up in Gloversville. The Polish kids and the Italian kids and the Irish kids, and I think that their parents were all very aware of the fact that especially post World War II, that generation that had that ebullient, buoyant optimism about the future. They were still very, very much aware of their ethnic background and kind of judged each other's progress in America along those lines.
Now, the Bridge of Sighs is a bridge in Venice, isn't it?
It is. I'm in some ways very like Lucy Lynch in this book, because given a choice of staying where I am and going someplace else, I generally stay where I am. But my wife dragged me off to Venice a little over a decade ago, saying that I would absolutely fall in love with it. And of course, she was right. She generally knows me better than I know myself. And I was particularly taken with the Bridge of Sighs and the legend of the bridge, which was that prisoners who were brought before the Doge, in the courts, and who were convicted, and more importantly, who were of the class of people who either had no money or no powerful friends to help them. Once they crossed from the court, they would cross the Bridge of Sighs into the dungeons. And if you were without wherewithal, you were going to stay there for the rest of your life. So the Bridge of Sighs becomes a fairly potent symbol for despair.
Also is the name of one of Bobby's paintings.
Yeah.
A number of films have been made from previous novels, Empire Falls, the TV series, and Nobody's Fool also. Is this going to happen here as well? And then one more thing, because we're running out of time. Rumor has it that you're writing a follow-up to Nobody's Fool.
there's some foundation, in fact, for that rumor. As far as Bridge of Sighs, it'll be interesting. I cannot imagine it as a 2-hour movie. It's just such a broad canvas. Unless you just decide you're going to do one small part of it and make a feature film out of that, it feels like a miniseries. If that's the way it's.
Well, maybe somebody at HBO has read this one as well.
Isn't it pretty to think?
Richard Russo will be speaking with Claire Massoud tonight at 8 o'clock at the 92nd Street Y. For ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. He'll also be reading and signing books this Friday at 7 o'clock at the Union Square Barnes & Noble store. The book, Bridge of Sighs, published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being with us again.
I always enjoy it. Thank you.